Sabat takes over for Blair. Blair. Man, the body's not even cold yet. Mainly because Jeff Blair's not actually dead. This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Jeff Sabat on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
On the Jeff Blair Show, I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mr. Blair in for Mr. McCowan this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Same deal tomorrow. Later on this hour, John Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports, will join us. Mike Wilkening, NFL writer, NBC Sports Pro Football Talk, will join us ahead this hour as well. Lots to talk about in the world of the National Football League. We stick with Toronto Blue Jays and do so with the legend, the man, the myth, one of my favorite people. Never mind guests, never mind baseball guys, one of my favorite people, Jerry Howarth, Blue Jays radio voice here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jerry just got off the line with Vernon Wells. What a delight it's been to see him in a Blue Jays uniform.
Well, that's true, Jeff, and I saw him a couple days ago, big bright smile, and he's happy to be here. He's had his career. He's very other directed, always has been. He took the good with the bad, and I like the way he helps other people, and he's done that on and off the field his entire life.
It's just great to see, and he sounds like he's in a very good place and working very hard at home, and I kidded with him that he's on vacation now working with the Toronto Blue Jays as opposed to helping out at home where the real work is. Amongst the new faces, Jerry, because there are a lot of new faces to see and to visit with, and I'm very curious, Jerry, as you come into this spring training and you get to meet these people for the first time, never mind the ball players and what they do on the field, but off the field, have you had a chance to really catch up with them, sit down and have a good conversation with them? And if so, who's made the biggest impression?
Well, there are a number of them, and you're right. The reason I like to get down here, Jeff, a few days early before the first game is to meet these young players, the prospects and on-roster invitees. And right away, Devin Travis comes to mind. Came over from the Tigers in the Anthony Ghost deal. Very outgoing, can play the game. The other day got taken out in the double play, but he was fearless going in there to turn that double play. That's the way you play the game. You play it hard. But he's got that infectious enthusiasm. Mitch Ney, I saw yesterday down in Bradenton. He's 21, and I like what he's doing, too. He's got a great sense of humor. He works hard with Mike Barnett, and he's looked at the whole situation here, and he's quietly taking it in. That's what you want. Matt Haig comes to mind, too, an outstanding hitter. And then some young pitchers, too, that you don't get a chance to see as much as the hitters because they're there with the pitching coaches. But these are the kids of the future. And when you draft, as Alex Anthopoulos does with his scouts, you're looking for heart, you're looking for intellect, you're looking for drive, and then the talent will take care of itself.
I'm always curious to see when a new catcher is acquired by a club and they have the entire offseason, or at least some of the offseason, to get acclimated with who they're going to be catching by talking to them on the phone, seeing tape, reading whatever they have to. How do you feel Russell Martin has adjusted to his new club?
Oh, outstanding. Now, remember, he's been with a few clubs, too, and he's been to 7 playoffs, so that tells you a little bit about those teams that he's been with, including the Pirates the last couple of years. Yesterday, Jeff, to give you an example, at the batting cage, I visited with Clint Hurdle, the manager of the Pirates, who had Russ the last couple of years, said, "Can you tell me about Russ? What did he mean to your club?" And right away he said, "Jerry, a joy to be around. Team first, drives everybody to a higher level. It's not about him. He's other directed. He gets the job done. Outstanding defensive player." And that's what you're looking at. And when he's come to camp here, he's got that smile too, but he's a hard worker. He sets a tone regarding being a role model for others. And A.J. Jimenez, a young catcher coming up, other catchers as well, they'll follow that lead. And the best acquisition for me in the offseason was Martin.
Yeah, and it's great to see that upgrade. And I call it that with all due respect, that is, to Deonor Navarro, who finds himself in a tough situation where he feels he's a number one catcher, and I feel he can be in Major League Baseball, but comes back with the Toronto Blue Jays this year, at least for the here and now, and who knows what his future is going to be. How do you feel Deonor Navarro has handled things and seeing him in spring training right now?
Well, first of all, he's a class act. So when he mentioned about wanting to be traded back in November, he saw Martin coming here and he saw his everydayness falling back. But having said that too, not only has he handled it well, for me, he's now one of the most valuable assets that the Blue Jays have from this standpoint. Should anything happen to Martin, an injury or trying to catch a knuckleball or a foul ball off his hand, they need Navarro as a backup. And for me, you could keep him all year. He could be a second catcher. He could be a third catcher if Tolley's going to continue to catch Ari Dickey. And I think that's probably going to be the situation. Because he's a switch hitter and can hit, Navarro can DH. And I think right now he's settled into the fact that he's just not going to be dealt because he is the backup catcher, and he can hit. And so that's what you want on your team. And I see him perhaps playing with the Blue Jays all the way through the July 31st trade deadline and then go from there.
It'd be interesting to see with Jerry Howarth, Blue Jays radio voice, here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, I'm Jeff Sammet in for Jeff Blair. Marcus Stroman boasting six pitches these days, and we've seen him already as he threw an inning and two-thirds yesterday, faced seven hitters, gave up an unearned run on two hits and a strikeout. But with that repertoire, what are your expectations for him this season, Jerry?
Oh, they're high, and not only for this season, but for the future. Having said that, you have to watch young kids and arm injuries. And Drew Hutchison comes to mind a couple of years ago with his Tommy John surgery. But putting that aside, Marcus is a competitor. He's pitched in that starting role. He likes it. He's good at it. And if he stays healthy, Jeff, he's going to be a pitcher in that rotation for years to come. He's got everything you need. And I like the fact, too, that he says, when I'm 5'8", that drives me to be even better. And that's something I like to do. And I've always been told by my dad, don't give in to that. You be you and pitch as if you have a little chip on your shoulder. People are saying you can't do this and you can't do that. And that's who you want on your team, not only in the starting rotation, but one of 25. You get 25 like that with that drive and desire, the talent will take care of itself and you're on your way.
Yeah, and us short guys, Jerry, we all have to stick together, don't we?
That's true.
With Stroman really enjoying the veteran presence of Mark Burley, it made me think about the Blue Jays offseason. And in talking with fans, and you know, you're going to get everything, and some saying we need to deal off some of the veteran pitchers on this club. But what always came to mind was, what do they mean to a Marcus Stroman? What is it that we don't see as far as Burley's leadership is concerned?
Well, let's go back to the question you asked me about young players. I mentioned players, and I said the pitchers are kind of in a camp under their own. Well, when you say Mark Burley, Jeff, Andrew Albers comes to mind from North Battleford, Saskatchewan. Had a chance to talk to him at length here the last few days with Jacques Doucette, who's come in. He's going to call 60 Blue Jays games in French from Montreal over the monitor. But Andrew Albers is as nice as they come. He's had the major league experience with Minnesota. And I said to him, what does it mean to you to be in this Blue Jays spring training camp? And one of the first things he said was, I get to be around Mark Burley. He's left-handed. I'm left-handed. He's a role model. He's someone I wanted to be around. I want to talk to him about the game. He's that way. He shares that. I'm going to spend a lot of time with Mark Burley to make myself better. That captures who Mark Burley is.
That's fantastic. And what a great asset to have as a young player to benefit from the experience of a Mark Burley. Pitching today tonight for the Toronto Blue Jays will be Daniel Norris. And we've talked a lot about who should be the fifth starter, who should be the closer for the Toronto Blue Jays, and a bit of a domino effect there as far as Aaron Sanchez go. With Marco Estrada in the mix, with Daniel Norris as a three-headed monster competing for the fifth spot in the rotation, if everything went the way that it should, Jerry, in your eyes, who should end up with the number five position in the rotation and with the closer's job as well? What would be the best case scenario for the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, I think right now for me, the fifth starter would be Aaron Sanchez behind Dickey and Burley, then Stroman and Hutchison. And then Brett Cecil would be your closer with the eighth inning setup man, the left-hander Aaron Loop, the right-hander Steve Delabar. Then you've got Marco Estrada, as you mentioned, and he would be a nice complement to those three I just mentioned in the bullpen. But I think right now, Brett can close. We saw a glimpse of that last year and even the year before that. And when you look at Sanchez, too, he has to be a starter like Stroman. That's where you want six-plus innings, maybe seven ideally. And you do that, now you make it a lot easier for your bullpen and your team to win those games. And as essential as the bullpen is, I think Brett Cecil can handle that job.
with Jerry Howarth right now on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, I'm Jeff Sam. But as far as center field goes, Dalton Pompey, Kevin Pillar, they each had a double yesterday. Pillar with a nice diving catch. Representation as far as the center fielders go, or potential center fielders go, with the Toronto Blue Jays. Are you happy with Pompey and Pillar?
Well, yes, now it's March. It's early March, and Dalton looks pretty good. He made a diving catch a couple of days ago at the Dunedin Stadium. And then yesterday, another diving catch by Kevin Pillar. And Pillar's already hit a home run. And as you mentioned, he had a good game yesterday. He had a double along with Pompey's double and single. And that's what you're looking for right now. But it's only spring training. One thing I like about Pillar early on, he's borrowed from Jose Bautista, that little high leg kick there, and get that down and get in there, that swing a little bit earlier. He's borrowed from that, as did All-Star Josh Donaldson. So there's leadership in and of itself. A role model like Bautista, who learned to hit through Dwayne Murphy, his hitting coach in 08 when he came from the Pirates, and his manager, Cito Gaston. And now you see Pillar borrowing from that. Pompey's a switch hitter. Where they're going to go April 1st, or April 6th in this case, as the Blue Jays open against the Yankees, I'm not sure, but I think with Michael Saunders down, there's a pretty good chance you've got Pillar in left, Pompey in center, Bautista in right, and you kind of go from there. But the Blue Jays probably right now are looking at some outfield depth, and I'm not sure where they're going to get it, even though they've acquired Diane Biciedo from the White Sox, Chris Dickerson, who's played with the Yankees and other teams. There's two pretty good backups if you need them right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that the Blue Jays had been working on, was depth in the organization, and something that was written about on Sportsnet.ca, that Mark DeRosa, formerly of the Toronto Blue Jays and a big bench player throughout his career, questioned the bench for the Blue Jays. And seeing all these bodies right now, Jerry, do you, we have to see what happens throughout spring training and who performs and who might not. Do you look at what potentially could be the bench of the Toronto Blue Jays, and would you be able to describe it as an asset or a strength?
Well, it depends on how it all shakes down come the opener, April the 6th. But Jeff, what you really want on your bench, and the Blue Jays have not had this here for the last few years, you want veteran major league players. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out. Again, you have to see how things develop. But when you have kids on the bench and then you're asking them to produce late in the game as pinch hitters, bunters, whatever it happens to be, then that's a difficult assignment. But for someone who's played 5-plus years in the major leagues and have adapted maybe to that role, it makes things a lot easier to get that big hit or a presence in the batter's box that maybe a pitcher facing that would feel, rather than a kid up there. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But the more veterans you have, they put themselves in a position to be on the bench, spot starters, or in Buffalo when needed. And that's where the Blue Jays are trying to develop that. It even swings to a pitcher we're going to talk about tonight, Jeff Francis, the likable Canadian from North Vancouver. He's going to pitch in that game too with Chad Jenkins. And love Jeff, and he's just 1 year shy of 10 years, and there's so many nice benefits to go with that, and he's real close to it. So look for him, too, to make that contribution as a veteran from the mound.
We will tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, with Joe Siddall and Mike Wilner. Jerry Howarth will be calling the game. Jerry, I want to ask this as well, just aside from the Toronto Blue Jays, but I have to say I'm rather envious of the likes of Barry Davis and Shai Davidi in Arden's Welling, seeing them down there in spring training, and of course the beautiful weather, but just the setting, the backdrop that is spring training. And I encourage any baseball fan that hasn't experienced spring training to go out and do it, because it's a baseball experience like no other. And surely, Jerry, it cannot be lost on you, decades of into your career and having experienced this time and time again. This is really a spring training, a baseball experience like no other.
Well, it's terrific for fans, first of all. You come down here, and if you do come down here, quote-unquote, you get away from the winter, and we all know how severe the winter's been in Toronto. So weather-wise, that's a real plus. Number two is the intimacy of where you are with the fans in these small ballparks and accessibility to the fans that you don't have during major league games. And for me, Jeff, not only do I benefit from that, but it's really a wonderful opportunity to prepare and to get to know these young players, as you and I have shared just a little bit, and to have that biographical sketch on all of them to be able to use now and when their future takes them to Toronto. So I look at it as a wonderful classroom. How blessed am I to have 6 weeks in a classroom outdoors like this here in Florida? But for me, there's one purpose. Every question, every thought, every idea is designed to share something with Joe Siddall on the air for our audience from coast to coast or on the internet around the globe to make that broadcast informative and entertaining. So I'm real happy to be able to do that all these years.
Well, you pull it off and have been for many, many years, Jerry Howarth. Jerry, thank you so much for this and looking forward to hearing you on the air tonight.
Well, you're welcome. And let me just say, how many Jeffs do we have up there? Jeff Blair, Jeff Sammet, my goodness.
I was the first one here, though, Jerry.
And
I think you've stolen that name at least once.
That's right. Everybody loves Jeff Howarth. It's Jerry Howarth they're having a problem.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
All right. There's one of my favorite people, Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, along with Joe Siddle and Mike Wilner, will have the call for you. The Blue Jays and the Orioles. Norris against Gonzalez, 7 o'clock here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. It's 11:15 on the Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Sammet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Mr. Blair on Primetime Sports today between 4 and 7. There's no shortage of things to talk about in the National Football League. What offseason? Am I right? Mike Wilkening, NFL writer, NBC Sports Pro Football Talk, joining us on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Mike, what do you make of Peyton Manning taking a pay cut to stick around with the Denver Broncos?
I thought it was surprising. I think that, you know, I'm of a general opinion that pay cuts are a difficult thing to push. I think that, generally speaking, the minute you start talking about reducing compensation is the minute you probably should think about going another way. I tend to think that it's, yeah, there's some savings, but we're not talking about a cut from like $19 million down to, you know, $5 million or something along those lines. It's a little bit of money. I suppose it does help Denver's financial picture. I don't understand why you do it, though. From my standpoint, what I would be curious about is that, you know, if I were a team that were looking for a quarterback, a team that didn't have a quarterback for a long time, a team like, say, Cleveland, and I got the sense that this was an issue, that they were looking to reduce his compensation or something was holding up the deal, I don't know what would stop a team from saying, hey, you know, offering something to Denver to get a deal done, even if it were a first-round pick. I think he's worth that still. And in fact, I think if he hit the free agent market, he'd easily be one of the five or six best free agents out there because he's still a top 10 quarterback in a position that is very difficult to fill. So I think this is a whole set of circumstances that, to me, that doesn't make a ton of sense. I'm sure I'm missing something about it. But I know it saves Denver money, and Manning certainly doesn't need the money at this stage of his career. But, you know, Jeff, I just think the whole thing's got silly, frankly. And that's just the way I see it.
It certainly did take me aback that Peyton Manning would take the pay cut. I thought the Denver Broncos would have wanted him enough to pay him at his full value, and Manning would have expected that and then eventually accepted that. But you talk about a team that is looking for a quarterback. Well, the Bills are sending an undisclosed pick to Minnesota for Matt Cassel. Is this it for the Buffalo Bills as far as representation with the quarterback position?
I think so. I mean, I think they probably had to do this if they didn't love the unrestricted quarterback class. And clearly they didn't because they were in on Josh McCown, who was a cut free agent. If they liked somebody under an unrestricted free agency, we'd have reports already from linking them to somebody. That hasn't happened. So it's clear that they're scouting there and said, you know, this is not what we like. So they probably went down the line and, you know, and said, look, who can we get for a couple picks? They got Cassel. You know, I think Cassel, frankly, is comparable to anybody that would be available in free agency. He's probably the guy, unless it's Manuel that takes a step forward. They don't have the first-round pick, as we know. So you'd be looking at a lower-round quarterback, and those are shaky propositions, typically speaking. So I actually think this is kind of a logical way to address the position. Jeff, I'm more of a bigger-picture guy in some of these things. I think it's really telling that you had a couple teams already that have filled quarterback positions and did not want to go into free agency and do it in Cleveland and Buffalo. So to me, that says something. The teams that desperately needed a veteran quarterback looked at the market clearly and said, we don't want any of these guys.
Mike, it's hard to ignore the parallel that is Rex Ryan with the Jets having a young quarterback in Geno Smith that did not work out, and then having him arrive in Buffalo with E.J. Manuel here with the Buffalo Bills. What do you think is the likelihood of E.J. Manuel taking that next step?
Well, it's comparable in the sense I think they're both quarterbacks trying to find their way, younger guys that have flashed some potential. What I like about Buffalo now is you've got Greg Roman in there. And Greg Roman, I think, is a good offensive coordinator. And I really think that this is a situation where if E.J. Manuel is going to show something in his career, this is not a bad set of circumstances for him. In fact, I think it's probably more favorable than last year, to be honest. They're going to be able to run the football, assuming the McCoy deal comes through. And, you know, even if it didn't, they'd have enough, I think, to be good at that position. You've got a number one receiver in Watkins, a good receiving core. You know, I got to be honest, I think it's not impossible that Manuel turns into a pretty good player under these circumstances. I really think that, I kind of like what Buffalo has done here this offseason. And I think that it's, you know, for a quarterback who's kind of at a make or break point of his career, it's not a bad kind of hand for him to be playing.
From McCoy's standpoint, in having not played football outside of Pennsylvania, because he's from there and, of course, was with the Eagles, now arriving with the Buffalo Bills, one understandably would not be happy with that if that were the circumstances. But if McCoy, in fact, is a Buffalo Bill, does he come around? Is he going to represent the Buffalo Bills? Is that going to be a bad marriage? What do you think goes down?
Well, I think it's if they're willing to take his contract as is, and we basically, as we can understand it, the primary reason why Philadelphia would make this deal would be to get out from under that contract. If someone else was willing to take that contract on, it would just be a matter of looking at all of the teams that would be willing to take the contract other than Buffalo, and you would come up with a number that'd be very small. It'd probably be one hand that you'd have. If that, this might be, I think in terms of a financial decision, this is kind of, I think, what this is the hand he has to play out. And so you may not like it. It may not be what he wants. Again, we're just hearing rumblings and things, so we don't know. And, he wouldn't be the first guy that didn't want to be traded. And again, the idea of being traded is unpleasant. I mean, it's you don't get control over it. I think people hate not having control over situations. So I don't think that's necessarily out of bounds if he feels that way. But in terms of him playing for Buffalo, if he's dealt there, I don't see another option just because economically speaking, he'd have to give up such a haircut in the process that, it just wouldn't make sense. I think he's got to play it out.
With Mike Wilkening, NFL writer, NBC Sports Pro Football Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, I'm Jeff Samadon. And sticking with that deal, Mike, from an Eagles standpoint, and Kiko Alonso in that addition there after missing all last year, having torn his ACL, what kind of impact will Alonso have on the Eagles? And I'm hoping not much because I'm a Giants fan.
Well, that's a defense I think that needed to get better. And I think that certainly he's a skilled guy coming off the knee injury. I think he fits in well with what they're trying to do. I think it's pretty clear from a secondary standpoint that they're going to start over with Kerry Williams, being cut, and Bradley Fletcher's a free agent, Nate Allen's a free agent. They're going to have some new pieces back there. They have obviously all the money in the world to spend now. I think Alonso, if he were to recapture his best form, you certainly would like the deal from that standpoint for Philadelphia. I do think this, though. I think Philadelphia, if you're looking at it from the perspective of a Giants fan or any of the teams that are kind of scouting where the Eagles are going to go here going forward, the Eagles all of a sudden, you know, have less playmaking punch than they did before. Now, I know that they've run the ball well with Chip Kelly. They've, you know, they play at a high pace and all those things. But the last two off seasons, they've gotten rid of DeSean Jackson, who's probably one of the 10 or 15 fastest receivers in the game and very productive. And they've gotten rid of McCoy, who, you know, or you're in the process of getting rid of McCoy, who's, you know, I mean, look, he's a dynamic player. So all of a sudden, you know, you don't have as much playmaking punch there on offense. So when I look at Philadelphia, they might be better defensively, but all of a sudden, one of their strengths, to me, which was one of their playmaking ability, their speed, they've got less of that now. So I'm kind of curious to see what they do from here, because they've, I mean, you can't argue that they haven't given up some real speed at some key positions.
Hmm. And speaking of players as well that missed all of last year with a torn ACL, Darnell Dockett, a longtime Cardinal, the defensive end, is now representing the San Francisco 49ers. He's 33 years old, is signing by the Niners, and again, an impact signing here. What do you think that impact is going to be for the San Francisco 49ers, not only acquiring this player, but taking him away from a division rival?
Well, the Cardinals, I think, were in a tough spot in terms of what he was owed from a compensation standpoint, and I think probably just ran the numbers and said, you know, this is not, we have to do other things, and the value proposition here, it just kind of swings on everybody at some point, and that's kind of where it hit Darnell Dockett. And, you know, he goes and joins, I think, an already good San Francisco defensive line. He's going to add to their bulk up front. You know, coming off the injury, given his age, you're kind of curious as to what he's got. But, you know, this has been somebody that's been a very good player for a long time. I would tend to think that to the extent, if he has anything left, which I'm sure he does, you know, he's going to help them in a pretty affordable rate. But I can understand why Arizona did what they did. I think they just kind of, you know, you kind of make a decision about what way you're going to go. They've got some free agency decisions to make. And, you know, Dan Williams, who's a younger guy who's probably going to get more money than Darnell Dockett, is a guy that, you know, is going to draw some interest. So they have some things they have to do. So I think it's going to be helpful for San Francisco. But when I look at the Niners, the real question for me is, you know, this was a team that offensively just couldn't score enough. And so, you know, they still have that problem. And how they go about fixing that problem and the effectiveness of the offense is really, I think, the story for them entering next season.
Yeah, certainly a team that is tweaking, the San Francisco 49ers. Mike Wilkening, NFL writer, NBC Sports Pro Football Talk. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. We've covered baseball and the NFL this hour. More baseball with John Paul Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports. He's going to join us ahead this hour. If you're looking for some hockey tonight, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 360, Thursday Night Hockey, the Blues and Flyers. So get your hockey fix there. More baseball. John Paul Morosi, Fox Sports, on the Jeff Blair Show. That's ahead this hour. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of The Jeff Blair Show with guest host Jeff Sammet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Sambit, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blair in from McCowan from 4 to 7 later on today. Same dealio tomorrow. Hockey Central on deck at noon. John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports joining us right now on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. John, before we talk about A-Rod and any possible discipline for the Angels, Josh Hamilton, I wanted to ask you about your take on the Toronto Blue Jays as of right now in going in and not adding to the bullpen as perhaps many would have liked, in seeing the uncertainty with the number five slot, although many options there. Moving forward with the Toronto Blue Jays, do you think that they take the next step this year?
Well, Jeff, it's a great question. I think that the AL East is as winnable right now for the Jays as it's been really at any time in the last decade or so. I think that there is probably not a clear favorite in this division. We saw a somewhat underwhelming offseason from the Baltimore Orioles as the defending champion. So there's an opening there for the Jays to win this division. And I agree with you that the bullpen is a concern. Now, we don't want to make too much of a spring outing. Of course, Sanchez struggled a bit earlier this week. Is he going to be the closer? Is he a starting option at some point in time this season? I think his repertoire, and I know Joe Siddall has said this as well, I think his repertoire is so conducive to starting that you almost feel as though he'd be miscast a little bit as a closer because of what he might be able to achieve as a starting pitcher down the line. So I think that at some point you probably need to go out there and get a late-inning reliever in the course of spring training. Now, of course, that can happen, and I'll be reluctant to maybe draw too many conclusions until we get to opening day. But I do think, Jeff, that this is a team that can win the division if they have the right amount of bullpen depth. And I really think you look around and you see this team is ready to win, and I think to not have a proven closer or a guy that you feel really good about getting the job done in the ninth inning, I think that would really be a shame to me, because I think this is a team that for the rest of the roster is built to win right now, and that's why I think going out there to get a Jonathan Papelbon at some point in time in spring training might be the way to go for this franchise.
So from a Philly standpoint, though, the Phillies are a team that might be puzzling to some, where you figure that they're going to get young, that they should be trading off these assets to kind of get the rebuild going, because it's going to take a little while. Yet Cole Hamels is still there, and other veterans are still there, Jonathan Papelbon included. When does the fire sale for the Philadelphia Phillies start happening?
Well, that's something that I think the Phillies have been pondering themselves a lot. Now, we know that they want to get younger. They want to start this rebuild. But, of course, the word you use, fire sale, is an interesting one, because if the Phillies are at a point where, and we'll see if they get there by the end of spring training, they say, look, we've just simply got to make trades. We've got to start this process of getting younger. I'm just going to make the best deal I can, and regardless of whether or not it might be maybe not a deal that you wanted, but you just make the best deal you can. If they're in that posture, then maybe we will see some activity by the end of spring training. But I actually think, Jeff, they spent all offseason trying to make these deals with the Boston Red Sox for Hamels. We know there was at least some conversation with the Blue Jays about Papelbon. And I think they got to the point where they said, look, we're not under a payroll mandate to trade these players right now, because, of course, they do have very healthy revenues from their TV contract locally. So I think they're not in a position where they're desperate to make a trade. I think they're desperate to make a trade from a player acquisition standpoint, but not a financial standpoint. So that is why, Jeff, I don't think we're seeing a team that's going to make a move at all costs on March 30th just because they have to make payroll. That's not where they're at right now. I think they're in a position where if the right baseball trade presents itself, they'll do it, but they're not under duress to do it from a financial standpoint, which I think is why you've seen this prolonged staring contest with the Boston Red Sox on Hamels, and even to an extent with the Jays on Papelbon. So really, it's anyone's guess if finally that move is going to happen within the front office of the Red Sox or the Blue Jays to make that offer that the Phillies want. But right now, from talking to sources there, Jeff, they feel as though they can take this team to opening day and not feel as though there's a mandate to cut payroll before then.
Well, and maybe throughout spring training there will be a hole, there will be an injury with another club in which they need to make a deal, perhaps under duress, and might be willing to overpay.
Sure.
Finally for a Hamels, a Papelbon, what have you. And maybe the Phillies are banking on that later in spring training or heading towards the trade deadline later on in the year. But getting back to Papelbon and the Blue Jays, so from a Blue Jays standpoint, John, you'd pay that price, whatever it is, to bring in Papelbon?
Well, it sort of depends on what the asking price is.
Yep.
And I think that's where you really look at it. And we know the Phillies, I'm sure, would want some young talent. Now, the Jays also had to peel off a couple prospects
to go and make that trade with Oakland for Donaldson. So they've already depleted somewhat their prospect base. And the reality is, if the Phillies come asking for somebody like a Sanchez or a Stroman or a Norris or a Pompey in exchange for Papelbon, I just can't see how the Jays can make that trade. Pompey might be their center fielder. Norris, he's obviously in Major League camp right now. We've seen him in the Major Leagues already. He's got a chance to be special. I don't think, as much as I say, yes, you need to get some more certainty in the ninth inning, if the asking price is one of those names I mentioned, Stroman, Sanchez, Norris, Pompey, I just don't see how the Jays can do that. So I think it's a very defensible position if the Jays say, look, if that's the asking price, we can't do it. I fully agree with that. So we'll see if it ends up obviously having to be one of the younger guys, the more recent draft picks. I think maybe then you have to think about that if it's a Hoffman potentially. But this is a situation where I think the Jays feel good about their farm system. It's not one of the elite ones in the game, Jeff, but I think it's a solid one. So if they can get a deal done without giving up one of those guys that's very close to the majors, I think they have to consider doing it. Again, because of where they're at, if you're talking about the overall evolution of this roster, and if you go out there and you sign a Russell Martin, you trade for a Josh Donaldson, you've got Batista and Encarnacion entering the last couple years of their contracts, this is when you have to win. You have Burley in the last year of his deal, Dickey as well. This is when you have to win. So if you're looking at the big picture here, thinking about where you're at as an organization, this is the time you make that trade. Maybe not for a Sanchez-Stroman prospect, but for one of the next group down, as I say, a Hoffman that, or a Pentecost, that type of a guy, you look at maybe giving up that kind of prospect if it's going to mean getting the closer you need to try to win this division this season.
Well, and it's such an important year for the Toronto Blue Jays from a standpoint of they're going to have a new president after this year, and winning this year or losing could dictate who is generally managing this club and who is managing this club as well.
Sure, and there's no question about it. This is as you point out, this is a very important year for the whole organization. What direction they're going in, the leadership they're going to have. I've said before, and I believe strongly, that I think Alex Anthopoulos had one of the better off seasons he has ever had as a GM this past offseason. I think it was a very strong offseason. I think obviously there's some concerns now Michael Saunders getting hurt in spring training, but overall, Russell Martin is a guy that I think is going to have a huge impact on this franchise in multiple different ways, obviously behind the plate offensively. Donaldson, I think, is ideal. I'm a little bit concerned, Jeff, about the swing and miss that they have throughout the lineup, a lot of right-handed bats. I'm worried about how they'll be maybe susceptible to some right-handed pitching, elite-level righty pitching with big-time stuff because of the orientation of their lineup. But I think you look at the rest of the club, and they're ready to win now. I think Alex has done a good job. But you're right. I think anytime you see a potential new CEO coming in, it usually means there's going to be a new GM at some point in time. That's just the way the industry works.
Yeah.
And despite all the work that Alex Anthopoulos has done, one has to assume if a new CEO comes in, there's a decent chance he or she would bring in their own GM as well. So I think that's probably something that Alex Anthopoulos has to be mindful of. It's just the reality of the business, and we'll see how that maybe dictates the course of this franchise here moving forward.
John, does Deonna Navarro, does he stick around with the Blue Jays by the end of spring training?
You know, that's something the Jays have to think about, because this is a team, Jeff, that their bench is very unique because of R.A. Dickey. And we'll see if Russell Martin can catch Dickey effectively. If he can't, then you have to have, obviously, Josh Tolley on the team somewhere or somebody that you feel is comfortable catching R.A. Dickey. You also have in Jose Reyes at shortstop a guy that needs a lot of rest because of his legs, because of his age, because of the turf. So you're in a spot where you're now looking at a great scarcity of bench spots. I think that if Navarro makes the club, it's a sign that maybe Justin Smoke is not going to make the club or is in a very reduced role, because when you talk about having to carry a backup shortstop, a potential platoon at second base because of the fact that you have a young, potentially young second baseman in Devin Travis. There's obviously these different situations that could occur there. Is Goins still in the mix? Is Turris part of that platoon? So you have a lot of different questions in the middle part of the infield. You have a rookie center fielder as well that you're going to need to have some allowances there to maybe rest them on a day they're facing a tough pitcher. So there's a lot of different roster complexities here, Jeff, that I think would make it difficult to carry Deonna Navarro, but and yet I see the value in what he does. I see the switch hitting bat. I see the fact that he can maybe play a little first base. He can DH. So, you know, obviously the Jays have tried to trade him during the offseason. Didn't work. And you wonder if, obviously, he could figure into that mix depending on how Smoke plays this spring. Because if Smoke plays well and Encarnacion is going to be the DH, I'm not really sure Navarro has a spot on this club.
John, I want to ask you about Alex Rodriguez and the possibility of him contributing to the New York Yankees lineup this year, as opposed to just he just feels like a life force that just sucks everything out of the Yankees for the last couple of years. Is he actually going to contribute to the New York Yankees this year?
Well, we'll see. And I think, Jeff, it's something that's only going to be answered with how he looks on the field the next few weeks. And I think that's the beauty of spring training, is it all we've had all these conversations all offseason long. How's Alex going to do? Is he going to be a distraction? You know, the Yankees, A, are used to distractions. So I don't think that sometimes we get all excited in the media and we want there to be a distraction. So we start asking questions about, is this a distraction? And then actually it's not that much of a distraction. So I think that sometimes we give ourselves a little too much credit. And sometimes the players there, most of them, are just concerned about their own livelihoods and showing up to work every day. And really, you know, in baseball, it's not that much of an issue, I don't think. So that distraction thing, I think, might be a little bit overrated. But on the field is the question. And to me, Jeff, we've got to see how A-Rod looks the last week or so of spring training, last week or 10 days. With A-Rod, I know there's obviously a lot of focus on him. Like yesterday was a big fuss about his first game, and I understand all that. But I think from an actual baseball evaluation standpoint, we really can't draw any conclusions. If he looks good, if he looks bad the next couple weeks, it doesn't matter. Because the question is, can he stand up to it every day, get on the field every day, or even at least every other day, which may be his actual role during the regular season as a part-time DH, part-time corner infielder? That's the question. So we got to look and see how he is on the field once he's getting four at-bats a game last week of spring training. So I'd say, Jeff, that question, I will hold that one in suspense for about another few weeks, and I'll get back to you once I see how he looks on about March 25th, 26th.
We'll talk then. John Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports. Thank you, John. Full value as always.
Hey, my pleasure, Jeff. Always great talking with you. And a busy week with news-wise with the hockey trade deadline. I loved following the coverage. I was lucky. NHL Network was carrying the Sportsnet coverage on Monday, so I watched the whole program.
Oh, excellent. Glad we could entertain
great.
And inform you,
great.
John.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. You get your hockey
you
fix, too. Follow John on Twitter, @JohnMorosi. He's got a good story on Josh Hamilton. Well, a detailed story, that is, because it's not a good story out of Josh Hamilton, what could be a discipline for Josh Hamilton. Thanks for listening. You could follow us on Twitter, @JeffSambit590. I'm back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in for Jeff Blair on The Jeff Blair Show. Listen to him today on Primetime Sports between 4 and 7 as he's in for Mr. McCowan. Hockey Central is next on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, and a happy 49th birthday, Michael Irvin.